Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Renee Safrata. She and I have known each other for quite a while now, going back to the Launch Academy days. She's actually given me coaching years and years and years ago. Today, we're talking about coaching, but from a different angle of attack. Today, we're actually talking about managing up as an individual contributor on a remote team. With that said, Renee, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Colin. Great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. It was really great reconnecting when we're part of the same community here in Vancouver, knew each other through Launch Academy. And today, you know, we're in the middle of COVID and we pushed our whole team remote. We're probably going to stay remote. And I thought it'd be a really interesting conversation to talk about managing up from an individual contributor's perspective. I'm curious why this topic or why this conversation today?
Definitely this conversation today, because everybody has been pushed out, like your team, with COVID-19, and people are struggling. Managers are looking for icebreakers. They need more than icebreakers. And employees are on their own island. Some are doing well, some are struggling. So I think that this is a really important topic, because if we actually put the emphasis onto the individual contributor and what can they do, they will in turn help their managers. And that's really a good thing for everybody. It's good for individual contributors to figure out what they have courage to do and what they're good at. It's good for managers to understand what their team members need more of. And it's really good for companies to understand who are the gems in the organization and who's willing to step up and stand out.
I love it. And this is, now you're the founder CEO over at Vivo Team. Is this an unusual angle for you, or is this par for the course?
No, this is really par for the course, because what we do at Vivo Team is we're very passionate about highly functioning teams. So what I think would be helpful probably if I talk about today is that what we've discovered in our research, what are the six key indicators of highly functioning teams? Because if individual contributors take on the notion that if they in their team bring those forward, the team will start doing better and better and better. So at Vivo Team, what we do is we provide behavioral analytics around the functioning and productivity around high functioning teams. We also help leaders and managers be their best and do their best. We do it all with behavioral science. And then we also provide online training solutions. So Colin, when you were mentioning your team is maybe thinking not going back to the office, our team has been spread across Canada for just under 10 years now. So for us, there was no impact in going, with COVID-19. But what we really recognized is what we do well, and how a lot of people, when they went online, it's bumpy. It's quite bumpy. So we can help with that, right?
That's really cool. I'm curious about, because I know you cover like teams in general, but zooming in on the topic today, if I'm listening, I'm going, should I listen to this episode? Why should we be thinking about managing up in the first place? Like, I thought managing is your manager's job, your boss's job.
Right. Yeah, that's old thinking. So that's no longer the way it is. Teams now are, and this was before COVID, remote teams or what we call distributed teams. We can have sales teams in multiple locations and multiple regions, and they are working for one cause, getting that revenue into the organization. But distributed team could be in multiple locations. They could also be on the first floor of one company, one building, and the third floor of one building. That is a distributed and a remote team. Now we have all the benefit of using our good work as individual contributors to uplead to our manager, to show the manager what we need more of. That pushes the level of accountability, self-responsibility, and at the end of the day, business results. So it's really important, I think, for your listeners to think about how they contribute to their team and what more they can do so that the team will move forward. Because the truth is, if the team is moving forward, there's more in it for me personally, in my career and personally and professionally, essentially.
Very cool. It's sort of that, the concept of extreme ownership, of it's yeah. not just about the, it's not just about your boss being the only one accountable. It's like, if you are, whether you're an individual contributor or the boss, is understanding that everything that's under your control is something that you own. And in that includes the relationship with the manager and how you communicate with them.
Yeah. At Vivo Team, we really work on the premise that everybody is a leader today. Everybody leads either some project, or they have to lead. They either have to cross lead to their coworkers on projects. They have to up lead to their manager, or if they're managers, they're down leading. So leadership has a very different look these days in functioning teams and functioning companies.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, I think this topic was relevant, but before COVID-19, but given COVID-19 and the fact that everybody, or I shouldn't say everybody, but there are a lot of teams that are now remote and could potentially be staying remote for a while, regardless of, whether their company intends to do so in the long run. I'm curious, how does managing up differ in a remote context versus in the office? Or what's different in the context there?
Well, I think the whole context of remote teams is that people have to communicate more frequently than they do maybe in the office. In the office, I could bump into you in the hallway, we could give each other a glance, and that's somewhat of a communication. But that's not the way it is when we're all sitting in our home offices. So work is not being done off the side of the desk as easily. So we really have to make sure that we're plugging in, we're connecting, and we're communicating. And there's a big difference between connecting and communicating. Communicating on sales teams, what I'm seeing actually after COVID-19 hit, is that sales teams are really great at reporting. Really great. Hey, this is what I'm working on. These are my priorities. This is what I'm going after. And this is what I did by the end of the week. But it's that connecting of what's really going on for me. And, what's the anxiety that I'm feeling around losing 6 deals? And what are these 4 deals? I need some mentorship on how to get these 4 deals across the line here. Help, kind of thing. So the onus is on each individual to come forward more in a remote workplace. And you're right, it's not going to change. We're here for the long run.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm just out of curiosity, could you hear any children screaming over the last couple seconds?
Children screaming. And children screaming are good noises to have in the background anyway, Colin.
We definitely got a few on the other side and I can hear it, but I'm hoping I got a dynamic mic here, which means it's hopefully just picking up what's coming here. I can't help myself from watching the audio levels. So I apologize for the brief interlude there.
Just think of it as texture to this podcast. It's just adding background texture.
100%. Traffic noises, screaming children. Yeah.
It's another value of remote workspaces.
Very, very authentic. Very authentic. That's for sure. And so I love the idea and I totally agree. It seems like it's the whole idea of remote work is it's forcing us to be more intentional about how we communicate, about how we run the company. At least that's what I've noticed. And so I'm wondering, in the remote context, how do we, if I'm an individual contributor, how do I manage up effectively?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one of the things that I want to put into context a little bit here with this conversation about individual contributors up leading is that often what we find when we go in and do analytics on any team is that we see that for some reason, silence has been agreement for a long time. So people have gotten away with, going into meetings and they're in a meeting with 8 people and 2 or 3 people do all the talking and the other 5 just sit passively. That is an issue in the workplace. It has been sort of thrown under the rug as not an issue until a company like Vivo Team comes in and says, hey, this is an issue. You've got people who have a viewpoint, a perspective, an opinion, and if they brought that forward, your project would probably move forward more quickly. So my point being is now, when we get further from the source, the blur effect starts to happen. The blur effect on goals, on values, on vision, everything, the further we move away from the source gets blurry. So what that means now is that if we really encourage, mentor, and ask people to come forward, and that they know, they give them permission that it is not a career limiting move, to come forward with your mistakes, come forward with your wins, come forward with what you're dealing with, then we can all move the needle forward. So in communicating in dispersed teams, we have to, as I said earlier, we have to move beyond just reporting. We have to go into that connecting and mentoring in a more significant way. So what I'm noticing is that there are people with COVID-19, or it doesn't matter, it's going to go beyond COVID-19. There are people that their competence actually increases when they go into the remote workforce. Why? Because they have actually less distraction. They have more reflection time, and they're able to think more thoughtfully and solve problems more thoughtfully. Those are the individual contributors that are just soaring in this new remote workforce. Now, if they don't tell their manager, hey, I really love doing this, or I figured this out, then there's a problem. We've got a disconnect. So as that individual contributor starts to really realize in their career achievement what their strengths are and how they want to come forward, and they start making that connection by up-leading to the manager, they're not only communicating, but they're driving their own career performance forward. And that's good for everybody, right?
100%. And so if I were to summarize this one as an individual contributor, the single piece that I need to be aware of is that I need to communicate more and speak up, especially in a remote context, because there's basically a lack of data, right? If we were in the office, I'm on a team of six and my boss sits over in the corner there, just by glancing around, the boss is getting information. Yep. Right? They can see that you're slumped over. They know that you normally sit a certain way. You may not be thinking of this consciously, but people pick up on these things subconsciously. And it's information, it's data that we don't have. And
that's
so
right.
The takeaway on the communication side is, as an individual contributor, we need to be more open. We need to be open to sharing more about whether it's working well or not working.
Yeah. The other thing is that I need to, as an individual contributor, recognize that I have been chosen to have a seat at this organization, and now I have to hold the seat. And I can hold the seat by talking about all of the other things that I can contribute to the organization and what I really love, what I'm really passionate with. I have loved it in at Vivo Team when we have gotten people to a certain level of development, and then they sort of raise their hands and they've said, hey, you know what? I could do a lot more for this company if you let me do this, this, and this. That's exciting for managers, because managers may be managing 10 to 18 people at one time. And unless you're the squeaky wheel that speaks up, they're not going to hear you, particularly if you're in a remote workspace.
Fair. Totally fair. And so when we're talking about communication, what are some things you've seen work and not, or like, let's start with, what are the things you've seen that haven't worked?
Staying quiet. I think that when people just hide and days go on, and then they're only going to plug in on Friday at noon to the remote pizza party, that's not good. And I think a real sign for HR professionals when managers are having problems staying connected with their team is when HR professionals come in to the HR, you know, let not come in, maybe now, they phone HR and they say, hey, I need some icebreakers for my Friday meeting. There's not enough connection and communication happening. That's a problem. And by the way, that's below the HR professional's pay grade. They don't need to be looking for icebreakers for your pizza party online. But what really, really works, I think, particularly in sales teams, I've noticed, is that we, as I said, we look at the reporting piece, but then we go in more deeply and we use technology as a mentoring opportunity with communication. So for example, if I'm on a sales call and I'm a subject matter expert and somebody is shadowing me, well, we are sharing a Google document and I'm essentially illustrating in a mentoring way to that account executive where I'm going with the conversation, where my head is right now and where I'm thinking. Well, that's just a different type of communication that we've now layered on to our meetings. We're not sitting silently, we're working in the background and we're being really effective because we're not only having a sales meeting, but I'm able to mentor and develop that individual contributor. So that's exciting.
Very interesting. And you know, I'm curious. So I feel like we could, each of these could be a podcast episode in itself. And so I'll try and keep it brief here. So we've talked about sort of communicating in a dispersed team. What's the next piece that we need to do to manage up effectively?
Yeah, I think that as an individual contributor, I need to choose not to enable my team and or my manager to get lazy. So for example, right now, a lot of people are doing remote meetings, and maybe they are their weekly sales meeting or their, you know, group coaching call or something like that. When lazy to me is when we turn off the camera, because it's the only way that we connect. So if we can keep the camera on and I can see that my manager is focused on what I'm saying, or I can actually say to the manager, hey, I just noticed you got a text there. I was just telling you about this particular deal that I'm working on. I just want to make sure you're still listening to me. That's up-leading. It may sound for a lot of your listeners like, oh, I couldn't do that. Well, that's the paradigm shift. This is the opportunity. Can you actually have a really direct structure in place and not enable the structure to fall off? Once you enable the structure to fall off, meaning we're going to meet remotely on camera, and then all of a sudden, week after week after week, more cameras go down, then we've got a problem. So what we teach at Vivo Team is something called norms. And we always say that you need to have behavioral norms for all of your meetings, whether they're remote meetings or face-to-face meetings. So we've got a list of norms, Colin. I'm happy to share them with anybody. But those are the things that as an individual contributor, I need to be self-responsible and hold others accountable in that structure of the day-to-day, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I would like to know what those norms are. I do like the idea of videos, of like videos on. And it's funny you bring it up. If anybody from our company is listening, I didn't get that from this video. I literally just had a conversation with our team. We do a Monday morning meeting where everybody checks in. And I had a chat with our senior team, and I said, I'm noticing like half of people are turning their videos off. And so I had asked the team, hey, you know, can we turn our videos on? I understand that not everybody can at all times. Sometimes you got somebody walking around in the background and you want to respect their privacy. Sometimes there are internet or video issues. I totally get that. But like, if you can, please turn it on.
Exactly. Yeah. And you bring up a good point. Like some people right now are working off of their kitchen table island. You know, they've got a spouse making her lunch or whatever, or his lunch. I get that. As long as I say to the team at the beginning of the meeting, that's a norm. I say to the team, hey, I've got to have my video off for 20 minutes today because we've got this going on. Or even what you said, Colin, look, I've got kids in the background. Can you hear them on the mic? Then we know what's going on. That's fine. So if you have norms and you follow them 80% of the time, well, that's better than none of the time, right? So one of the norms, you asked about the norms, one of the norms is throw radio style. The more people that get onto a remote meeting, unless I throw over to you, Colin, nobody knows when I'm finished. And so we get these really ineffective meetings because people are talking over one another. And it's frustrating. So norms like that can really help out.
Yeah, I love that. We have a couple different types of meetings, and one of the things that's helped us was, one, if it's a big company meeting, I do exactly that. We have a bit of a structure ahead of time. And then two, for the meetings that are remote, and I won't go into it on this on the Zoom here, but the level 10 meeting idea or concept from the EOS program has been super impactful. And if we didn't have that in place and going remote, it would be this would be a very challenging company to manage without it. But without all of EOS, but specifically if you're curious, if you're struggling with online meetings or Zoom meetings, check out the level 10 meeting format. It's been incredibly effective.
Yeah. Yeah. We heard as soon as COVID-19 hit, a lot of our customers said to us, if we hadn't had Vivo Team with us before this hit, we would not, this would have been chaotic, absolutely chaotic. So yeah, I'm happy to share those norms anytime.
Awesome. And so the first one that we're talking about, the first piece is making sure that we're staying connected and communicating with the team. So if I'm an individual contributor, it's about not not staying silent. The second piece is to making sure that I'm not physically, but I guess visually connected. And so I'm not checking out, and just not on the meeting, just to participate, but I got my video off and I'm actually doing other things. So what you're saying is if you're in a video call or if you're in a meeting, 100% of your time and attention dedicated to the video as an individual contributor, no distractions. And if your boss is distracted by looking at his phone, treat it just as if you would in the physical realm. If he's looking at his phone, hey, Julian, I see you're looking at a text, you know, maybe I'll wait until you're done. And then we can start this over again. And yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I'm going to interrupt you there. Sorry, Colin. I think really the communicating one, absolutely. The second one kind of got a little bit blurry in with communication as well, but really it's the structure of, do we have norms for how we work together in remote teams? And do I have the permission as an individual contributor to hold people to those norms more, right? Like saying to my boss, hey, we have a norm that we're going to be present. I'm talking to you about a deal here. You've lost your presence with me. You've just gone to the phone. That was our norm. So as an individual contributor, what I'm really doing is I'm no longer enabling that, because that guy has title of manager, I'm not enabling him. It's more important to me that as a team, we have aligned to a particular structure of remote meetings, and we are all responsible to holding up our end of that.
Gotcha. And so that was just one specific example, but the really the second piece is just establishing what those are with your team and sharing them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Living to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. We've worked on our communication in terms of as an individual contributor. We're working on, you know, establishing and following norms. What's the third piece?
Yeah, I think the other thing is really making sure that we are staying cohesive as a team. So again, I'm going to say that, you know, what we do at Vivo Team is we often look at, what kind of a team are you? Are you a football team? Are you a relay team? And often when we work with sales teams, people are sort of like, yeah, well, you know, I'm an individual contributor with individual sales, but I don't really connect with Susie. She's her own individual contributor. Well, you're still a team, because there is an end quarterly quota that has to be reached. So if we're looking at staying cohesive as a team, as an individual contributor, then what I can do by not, again, staying quiet is I can think about the overall field of the team and how I can uplead for connection. So I may be, in a particular reporting meeting and I'm doing really well, but Colin, I noticed that you're struggling. You've struggled for the last three meetings. Well, why don't I have more of an other perspective by getting out of myself and saying, perhaps, to the manager, hey, you know what? I noticed that Colin is struggling. That's going to have a direct and significant impact on our overall results. How can I support Colin? Or how can I support you, manager, kind of thing? Those types of getting in and being more mindful of what's happening in the field of the team help teams be more highly functioning, because they're thinking less of just myself and more about other.
No, just for clarity, is that something that you would do live on the call, or is that something that would happen sort of after the call?
Thank you for that question. So do you do that live on the call, or do you do that after the call? Again?
Because it feels like
teams,
if you were...
Yeah.
Sorry, just to bring it back. It feels like if I'm doing this online in a Zoom call and I'm like, hey, you know, Colin is really, you know, shit in the bed over there. It feels like you're almost calling him out.
Yes, you are.
As opposed to being supportive.
Yes, you are. But here's the thing. So this we could do a podcast on this one little topic, Colin. You're absolutely right. So here's the thing. Remember, our premise is highly functioning teams. So with highly functioning teams, the culture is that everything gets done in team. You're no longer in the paradigm where you sort of do, you know, some sort of sounds like a corrective behavioral conversation outside of the team, one-on-one, instead of inside the team. If it's done well, and that's a big part of what Vivo Team's job is to teach people how to have these tough conversations done well. And so there's a whole methodology around that. Like, how do we enter into the, like you said, shit the bed? How do we enter into these conversations that are not pleasant, but that we do it well? So for instance, Colin, I might say on the Zoom meeting with my manager there, let's say my manager's name is David and you and I are co-working on the call. And again, we have to have this set as a premise that this is okay. And we as a team agree that we want the support of others. I might say, hey, Colin, you know what? I've noticed in the past 3 weeks, it seems like you've been having difficulty getting your deals across the line. I'd like to support that, Colin, if I can do that, help you in some way. And I'm wondering, Dave, if there's any way that you'd give me permission to work with Colin on that, or Dave, if there's any way that you would think that as a team, we could help Colin. So it's a more inclusive, it's a more inclusive feedback conversation with the spirit of the team does best, we all do best, right?
Gotcha. Am I picking up a little bit of non-violent communication there? I just read a book. Somebody recommended it. It was like a watch the thing. They recommended the book. It was called Nonviolent Communication. And in it, he provided a way of structuring feedback. It reminded me of the way that you structured that piece right there.
Yeah. Again, you're absolutely right. So with these six key indicators of highly functioning teams at Vivo Team, we teach models for each one of the indicators we're talking about. So we've talked about communication, we've talked about structures, we've talked about cohesion. There's definitely a language and a way that these can be, let's say, people who are not working effectively can sort of move to level one by knowing a language, and then they can make it their own level two. And then by level three, they've, you know, the whole team's rocking sort of thing, right? So that's definitely what we do when we look at solutions. One thing I want to talk about too, because I think it's important. So if we could move to emotional intelligence.
Just before we jump into that, I'd love if you could just kind of break down how you came up with that, just that statement of, you know, you're asking if you can support. Yeah. Because that's a really interesting piece. I've noticed that I've started doing this a little bit more after reading a specific book, and there's no real right or wrong way of doing it. But I think in the past, I'd be like, if I was talking to if you're my manager and Colin is this other individual that's crapping the bed, I'd be like, hey, Renee, I noticed Colin has missed quota. Can I help him? Or has consistently missed quota, can I give him a hand? Which is a very helpful statement. And obviously I wouldn't say shit the bed in a sort of public meeting, but I feel like that's one, like, probably not the best way of framing it. The way that you had sort of framed up the same idea was a much, much better, way of communicating the same. And so I wonder if there's like a structure or a methodology for how you came up with that, or is it just you're a much smarter, less blunt person than I am?
Oh, I'm not less blunt. don't make that assumption. There definitely is a structure. So first of all, again, we at Vivo Team have made the decision to look at highly functioning teams and the connection between leaders, managers, and their teams based on behaviors. So Colin, you've probably heard, you've probably yourself done like some sort of profile analysis, a Myers-Briggs and insights, MBTI, something. Those are very individually based, and they're also quite complex in order for managers to sort of take the data, the information, and actually be able to apply that into their day-to-day, like a meeting, like you're saying. So what we realize is if we can actually just analyze people's behaviors and then take notice of behaviors, then we could layer on models or language around behaviors. And then managers don't have to be psychologists. They can actually work with their teams really well. And by the way, individual contributors and team members also have an easy way to do it. So if you break that down, looking at behaviors, all I did was I started with a very behavioral-based statement, which is, I noticed. My next thing that I'm going to fill in the blank is going to be, what's the behavior I noticed? So I noticed you haven't met quota for 3 months. That must be tough for you. I think I have a little extra time. Could I support you in that? Right. And again, it's coming from a place of, we're a team. My my results this year will be better if the company's results are better. So mm-hmm. how can we be really inclusive? A bit less dog eat dog.
For sure. And so it's just starting with, it starts with I've noticed, and then you refer to the behavior that you've noticed. Yeah. You're applying like an empathetic label, right? That's got to be, you know, I've noticed you've done X for the last period of time. That's got to be tough. Here's how I want to help. And now you're injecting like, you know, a request, not saying, hey, I can help you with this, but asking, hey, would this be helpful if I took some time and did X, Y, Z?
Yeah. So let's clean up the one that we just talked about a minute ago, which was structures and norms of behavior. And we talked about the manager is on his cell phone. I can again say, hey, Dave, I noticed that you're on your cell phone. I'm curious, is something urgent? Should we stop the meeting and regroup later? Or I noticed that you just checked your cell phone. I'm recognizing that I prepared to make this presentation today, and I really need 100% of your presence, of your, you know. So you can see how it starts to have application when, again, I am just noticing Dave's behavior of being on his phone. I'm not making anything else up about it. I'm still remaining curious, right?
It's such a great, it's such a tiny little tweak, at least for me, because in a situation like that, if I'm giving a presentation and manager Renee is not paying attention or is checking her phone, I'm going to be angry. And so the initial thing that if I just let my brain spit out of my mouth, whatever it fucking wants, it's going to be something that's probably a little bit angry. And it sounds like what you're doing is saying, insert a little gap between what your brain thinks and what your mouth says that says, here's a fun way, or here's a less aggressive way of framing that up. And it's the I noticed statement.
Oh, Colin, this is such a good segue to emotional intelligence. Can we use it? Let's use the angry. Okay. So if you think about emotional intelligence, the five factors of emotional intelligence: self-awareness, self-management, empathy, social skills, and leader assertiveness. So let's say you're in a meeting and the first thing that you notice, your self-awareness is, I am getting angry. My chest is tight. I'm hot. Like, I'm angry. That's number one of emotional intelligence. Now, the second thing is, how am I going to manage that? So in your example, you kind of said, I'm assuming, well, I'm just not going to say anything. And then guess what? The management of not saying anything is, I'm going to get resentful. And now that's not fun either. And that's what a lot of people do, because they don't have the competence to properly bring something forward. Like, I noticed, and this made me angry, right? So then empathy now is, I am angry. I'm in this meeting. I'm about to blow it here. Is to have some empathy for myself and just understand, I've been angry before. I've gotten through it. Okay. Have some empathy for myself. Then start to bring my empathy up for other people who I see around the room or around the Zoom meeting that I think are angry as well. Have some social skills. Here's where the killer comes in. This is where now I use my language. I step up and I actually have a conversation, or I start with, I noticed I'm getting angry, or I noticed you said that and I'm pissed off, or whatever it is. But I notice gives you that little key. And then the last thing, leader assertive, is I'm actually choosing to own my seat. I'm going to choose to say, I have a viewpoint, I have opinion, and I'm going to push back on the opinion that you just put forward. I don't think it's reasonable, or I don't think it's appropriate, and it pisses me off, sort of thing. So there we have, again, how an individual contributor can develop their own emotional intelligence by just listening to what's going on in my body or what's going on in my emotions and navigating that process to actually bring that to their manager or their coworker. So we've got communication, structures, being aware of cohesion on the team, like who are the subject matter experts and how do I, you know, look at the team as a field of the team, emotional intelligence. And so we've already covered four great indicators of six.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you were talking about there sort of reminded me of, and I think I brought it up a couple times on the podcast, but we're 150 episodes deep. And so I'm going to assume that people that are listening haven't listened to all of them. Cause I've hardly listened to all of them and I was there for all of them. So no judgment here. But there's a Viktor E. Frankl from Man's Search for Meaning. And it's, I'm going to butcher the quote. I won't get it exactly right. But it's an amazing book. Don't read it unless you're prepared to have a little bit of a cry, because it is, okay, it is a heavy, heavy book, but it was probably one of the best books I've read. And the quote is, you know, in between stimulus and response, there exists a gap. And within that gap is your ability to choose how you respond and how you feel about the situation. And he was the context here, he was a psychologist that was taken by the Nazis into a concentration camp. And it documents and details his psychological experience. And it's not one of those, like, it's not getting into the nitty gritty of the concentration camp. It's more looking at the prisoners from a therapist's or a psychologist's point of view, talking about mindset and all of that. It was really interesting that way, obviously talking about something that was devastating part of the history, but the fact that he was able to come away from that with some insights is truly impressive. So shout out to that book. But coming back, it sounds like what you're saying is we need to have the sort of gap in between stimulus response if we want to react in an emotionally intelligent way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that now is a really great time as well, with the stress of COVID-19, for people to be considering how their emotional intelligence can serve them really well. And whether that's during COVID-19 or whether that's working on a remote team later, you know, this idea of actually listening to my emotions. Let's say I did a webcast or webinar last week. People were talking about their anxiety rising, their migraines rising, the strain on their eyes, they're fatigued at the end of the day. All of these are really, really great signals and really great fodder for developing my emotional intelligence and being a stronger individual contributor to that team at the end of the day, because I'm actually aware of it, not just ignoring it. And again, I would say, because there may be some people listening that are like, yeah, Jesus, I am experiencing a lot more headaches right now during COVID-19. Well, again, use your social skills, reach out to your coworkers, reach out to your managers, and just have that conversation. Hey, is this going on for you? This is what my difficulty is. I've got headaches and I can't work through them. Mm-hmm. Often just having that conversation allows us to move forward.
Totally. Also, blue light glasses helped me a ton.
There you go.
$25 hack. I don't normally wear glasses. So yeah, but we won't go on that tangent. But if you've tried all these other things and you want to like a $25 potential quick win, that's what one of the things that helped for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think like the whole theme here is that in a remote context, as an individual contributor, we have fewer touch points with our manager, with our team. And so we have to make the most out of them. We have to be, you know, like you said, emotionally intelligent, present in meetings. We have to be sticking to our norms. And the next one we're talking about is really around the results that we need to own. And so can you talk to me a little bit about how accountability works on a team, and then what's different about it in a remote team?
For sure. And I do want to just skip back just very briefly, Colin, on something that I heard you say. I heard you say that in remote meetings, we have less touch points with our managers. I think that that is a paradigm shift that managers really need to get and individual contributors really need to get. This is different. This is a paradigm shift. You need to have more touch points. So how do I, as an individual contributor, make sure that in my week, there are more touch points? Right? Okay. So you asked about this idea of accountability, which is number 5 of 6 key indicators. So again, I think the big thing here is really identifying when I'm working remotely, what is my personal responsibility to being productive and being effective? So for me, I know that I have to do things to keep my stress low and to make sure that I'm on during the day. And I'm on a lot of the day. So I work out in the morning and I make sure that I go out and I take a walk in the middle of the day, that I get away from my computer. I'm the type of person that I could sit and stare at my computer for the just hours and hours and hours, because I go down these rabbit holes and it's not productive. It's just, it's working on stuff for stuff's sake. So first thing, personally responsible to my structure of how I can be effective. And then what I need to do is I need to tap into the rest of the team and be accountable to the team. So right now in a remote workplace, because a lot of people haven't got their setup properly done, or it just happened too quickly, we've talked a lot about, you know, employees who They are in a remote workforce and they've got their kids at home and they're trying to homeschool and they've got three kids and the cleaning lady's not coming in anymore and all of these things. Well, I can set up with my spouse the personal structure. And what I'm hearing is that a lot of people are working in the evenings when the kids are going to bed and they're splitting the day of daycare kind of thing. Well, great. Okay, you set that up personally. Now be accountable to the team and up lead to the manager and say, look, this is what my family has figured out to, is working. So can we possibly set our reporting meetings for Wednesday in the morning instead of Wednesday in the afternoon? Again, focus on accountability of how I am going to be most productive. And I'm going to get those deals done because I have the time and the headspace to work on them, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of the most interesting things that I've seen since we've gone remote as a company. Also, my wife and I working in the same room in a remote context. Overnight, we were working an extra whatever our commute was, right? Like I can't remember the name of the principal, but the work has expanded to fit the time that we have available.
Yeah.
And so, whereas before my wife would leave at 7:30 and she'd be back here by 5 to 5:30. Now at 7:30, we're both here in front of our computers. And we're on those computers until 5:30 when the nanny goes home and we've got to jump back in with the kids. And I think it's so easy not to notice. But you've just added a couple hours to your day, right there. And like, we're fortunate enough to have a nanny. I can't imagine what people that don't have that sort of childcare going through. I've, you know, friends or neighbors just down the hall are experiencing similar challenges. But to come back to like what I've seen across the team is that their time is just expanding and they're not taking care of themselves. And they're thinking that, well, if I don't do all this time, like if I don't do all this and we're remote, you know, so-and-so isn't going to think that I'm contributing, that I'm not, you know, being a team player or I'm not doing the work. And so there's all these people at Predictable Revenue that I think are, and I can't say I don't have the exact stats, but I worry that it's more than it's too many people that have just all of a sudden added an extra 2 hours to their day every day.
Go ahead. And what I would say to that, Colin, is again, that goes back to norms. We just haven't taken the pause point to set, you know, what does remote working stay at home norms look like right now, like for us, and review in 30 days and review in 60 days, because it's changing and it will forever change with remote working. I was thinking it's not the new normal, it's the next normal. Like the next normal is going to change in 60 days. It's going to be the next normal, right?
Yeah.
So if we actually have a pause point, it can just be a half an hour meeting. And again, it can be a Zoom meeting and you can get some post-it notes on Zoom or a whiteboard and sort of say, this is what remote working looks like for me. And then create three top priorities. Well, you've got some norms and now you can review in 30 days. I think if you choose not to do that, then people are just... again, it's the blur effect and people are doing their best, but they might not be doing the right best thing. So again, efficient teams, they connect.
Gotcha. I like the accountability piece because I think there's a couple sides to it. There's the personally accountable to, you know, the norms, there's having the norms in the first place, but I think there's also the accountability to the metrics, you know, the things that, if I'm an individual contributor, I have these numbers and I know that I'm accountable to those numbers. And I think if you read about, you know, the results only workplace or anything like that, you know, one of our core values as a company is we pay you for what you accomplish, not for the time that you sit in your seats. And I think it's a matter of holding ourselves accountable, you know, to living that.
Yeah. And so if you sit in your seat from 2 till 3, are you more valuable than sitting in your seat from 4 till 5? That's a question I always have.
Yeah.
It depends. Maybe you as a parent from 4 till 5 is a harder time for you to sit in your seat right now. 9 till 10 works better. So we've got to have those conversations.
Totally. And holding yourself accountable to understanding when you work best and that, yeah, you know, it's okay to just work the hours that you're most productive.
Yeah.
It's still hard for me. As I grew up in sales, I'm so used to having a quota and having these, you know, very specific actions I need to do every day if I want to hit that quota. that to me, you know, going out in the afternoon and going for a run, that's a hard thing to do. I know it's the right thing because it lets me reset. You know, there's a certain time in my afternoon where I'm not super productive. And if I can be, you know, if I can get exercise in that window and come back, I'm actually much more effective than had I just sat here and ground away at my computer. And so it's actually the best thing for me to do. But again, it's hard because it's the, I feel time bound by this. Oh, I've got to be, you know, at my computer between business hours.
Yeah, I get that. It's hard. It's hard for me. It's hard for a lot of people. It's a behavioral change. And I think that for all of us, again, especially right now, we have to navigate that short-term versus long-term conversations. And we have to navigate, am I most effective on a Tuesday, or actually am I going to be most effective this week overall when I look backwards in the rearview mirror on Friday? Really, did I get what I got needed to get done? And it's a tough one. Like, people have to navigate it.
And I totally agree. It's, it, you know, there's so many challenges that we're all kind of facing together. I think the one thing that's pulling us all together is that we do have this common kind of enemy in COVID-19 that we're all pushing back against. And moving to remote is not an easy thing to do. And so the fact that so many teams have done it and the world hasn't exploded, I think is a really positive thing. And just to kind of bring our conversation to the close, I did want to talk a little bit about feedback, which I believe is the last of the six key pillars. So talk to me about, if I'm an individual contributor, what role does feedback play? Right. I think the saying goes, shit rolls downhill, not uphill.
Yeah. Hopefully not anymore, Colin, after this podcast. Yeah. So feedback, you know, feedback is so incredibly important. So what is feedback? First of all, feedback is, I notice a behavior, it has a positive or negative impact on the team. Feed forward then is my expectation going forward is that in order for that behavior to have a positive impact on the team, it would look more like this. And then follow up later is what follow up later looks like, meaning we just follow up on that conversation. So imagine as an individual contributor, what I've noticed my team has said to me is, you know what, Renee, they've given me the feedback. I need to know what the big picture of Vivo Team is. On a weekly basis, like, just tell me what you're learning from your customer conversations. That's great. That's feedback. So they were sort of noticing that it had an impact on their anxiety, their job security, that maybe they were on the outskirts of those conversations. I love that because I didn't know. So I have to rely on the individual contributors in my team to bring forward what they need more of. And those that bring forward what they need more of, they will always get it from me and the managers on at Vivo Team as well. Because again, it's a two-way dialogue and we're here as a team to be as most effective as we can be. What really doesn't work is when people just stay quiet because they are concerned that they're going to hurt someone by giving them feedback. Again, old thinking. A lot of us have taken our personal experience of being in families where we had a lot of criticism and we just hate criticism. Feedback is for the wellness of the team structure. It's about being directive about what would be better for the team, a better impact on the team. It's a hard one. It is the toughest indicator when we measure in our behavioral science and analytics. We see that across teams, feedback is something that really needs to be held with kid gloves and it needs to be taught in order for people to get it. But once they get it, they start to really rock. Mm-hmm.
I love that. And it's so critical. I think coming from, you know, it's been interesting. I sat in an individual contributor seat for a long time and, you know, constantly soliciting feedback because, you know, that feedback is going to help me make more money. And so to me, it just seemed like a no-brainer. And I recognize that I am one of 16 personalities. If we want to look at the Myers-Briggs analogy, and that I have my own unique experience. But from, you know, here's, you know, N equals one, as somebody who's a manager, a leader of a company, the thing that I appreciate the most is feedback. No matter what role that I'm sitting in, because that feedback has the opportunity, because any negative or positive effect I have on the team is multiplied through 50 people. Right. And so any feedback that might help improve my multiplier, whether positive, increase the positive or decrease the negative, is going to have a massive impact. And so I'm open to that. It's a matter of like delivering it in a, you know, in a way that's going to be, that's not going to get people's back up. But I think in general, even if it's delivered poorly, at least my mindset is, you know, I'm, you know, my actions get multiplied, that it's my duty to, I sort of have to be open to getting that, because the change can be like from a 5-minute conversation can be monumental.
Yeah. I think the whole thing with remote teams, just going back sort of to the general idea, is the more conversation up, down, across, around that happens, the better for everybody. So hopefully, if this has been some sort of health crisis that sort of separated us, we're going to actually ultimately connect at a higher level than we ever did before, sitting beside one another in offices.
100%. I love that. I just want to bring it to close with a quick recap, because we talked about the 6 pillars. The first one is really about communication. Again, making sure that we're not sitting silent, that we're recognizing that there are fewer points to connect. Talking about making sure that we're structuring our days to stay connected and establishing those norms. The next piece is making sure that we are staying cohesive and paying attention to each other. And so we're not letting ourselves check out in meetings. The next piece is, you know, focusing on coping using our emotional intelligence. And so making sure that we are leveraging that to stay connected with our peers and being empathetic towards them. And I'll wrap there. Focusing on accountability and holding ourselves accountable to those norms, holding ourselves accountable to our metrics, and then to, you know, the personal agreements that we worked out, whether it's, hey, I'm going to take, you know, the first half of the day with the kids and my wife's going to take the second half, and making sure that we are not, you know, working those, you know, going from a 7.5-hour day to a 10.5-hour day, because that's not going to be productive in the long run. And the last piece just comes down to quality feedback and making sure that we are not just in general communicating better, but also remembering that in this, like, this is not something that's specific to remote or even to COVID, is that the feedback in both directions can have a massive impact. But it's, you know, while we're in a remote context, it has a much, much higher impact because there are fewer touch points. Yep. How did I do?
You did really well.
Renee, this brings us to my absolute favorite part of the show, the cold call.
The cold call.
So before we jump in and my phone goes ring, ring, and I pick up my fake pretend hand banana phone, tell me about who's your target buyer or your target prospect. Who am I, what role am I taking on today?
Yeah. So we generally call into those people who make decisions around their talent. And we also call into companies that invest in their talent, because we know that if you invest in your talent, you get them more productive, then the company gets results. And sadly, there are some companies that don't invest in their talent. So we're looking for VPHR, you know, CH, there's so many titles in the talent, organizational talent person, chief of people, that kind of thing.
Cool. Let's say I'm the VP of HR then. And any type of company or tech companies?
We're generally working with companies that need to create projects in primary working teams, distributed teams. So engineering, tech, high growth, you guys are great because you're, you know, a high growth company. Let's go with that. Your VPHR, high growth company called Predictive Revenue.
Perfect. All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Oh, hi, Colin. We provide leadership and team training solutions, which are powered by data and people analytics. If you give me 1 minute of your time, will you then let me know if I should keep talking?
I'll give you 30 seconds because I'm just heading into a meeting.
Okay, I noticed on your website at Predictable Revenue that you've experienced a lot of growth. And I started salivating with this whole idea of Banana Bread Fridays when it was mentioned. Are you measuring the productivity of your teams right now?
We're measuring the productivity of our sales team because that's the, yeah, that's where we, like, it's very obvious. But other than that, not really.
And how are you measuring that? Is that based on quota? Is that based on numbers or behaviors?
I would say each member of the sales team has their, if they are on a meeting producing, they have their meeting producing metrics that they're like their production, number of meetings they're supposed to book. If they're a closer, they're in the number of closing, number of closed deals every month. And then we look at, as a sales team, we kind of look at where their pipelines are.
Interesting. Would you be interested if I could show you that a sales team we recently worked with reclaimed $42,000 in just 6 weeks of learning the six key indicators of highly functioning teams?
I think I'd be stupid to say no to that.
That's awesome. Let's book a meeting for next Thursday at 2.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Renee. I love this. I appreciate that you don't cold call very often, and that was awesome.
Thanks, Colin. It's because I'm listening to your podcast when I'm walking during COVID-19. I listen to you guys every day.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to get in touch or they want to learn more about the things that we talked about today, what's the best way?
Yeah, give me a call. You can go to our website, vivoteam.com. You can send us an email at hello@vivoteam.com, or you can also find me on LinkedIn. Loving building my LinkedIn network, and I'm learning that from the Predictable Revenue web podcast as well. So Renee Sofrada, Vivo Team, you can find me.
Beautiful. And I think you mentioned earlier that you had a little mini course on the subject matter that we talked about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So in response to COVID-19, what we designed is on those six key indicators, we have designed products. They're short, little 30-minute sessions so that your full team can understand those six key indicators. We're doing it both for web managers and both for team members, just so that people can really connect around those indicators, know what they are, and put them into play. And we do those in bigger programs when we're in a different situation. But right now, I think it's a really good COVID response. So we can share that out with everybody as well. It's called Connect 2020 for Teams.
Cool. I'll throw a link in the show notes if people are curious. Renee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Colin. And the kids were a lovely texture in the background, by the way. I want you to know that. Don't edit
Thanks
that
so
out.
Much.
Okay,
I
talk
won't.
Soon.
I won't.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. See you all next week.